Now we're holding on page 124 in Bava Basra, the last line, middle of Ois Lamed Zayin. We started learning yesterday about the takana of Yeshua ben Gamla, or we said it may have actually been a takana of Shimon ben Shatach, which Yeshua ben Gamla was basically the public face of it, that there should be melamde tinoikos, there should be cheder teachers in every town, in every city, and this way the Gemara says that helped that the Torah was not forgotten from any segment of the Jewish people. So, we said, the last thing we said was that the takana was that they would have children start going to cheder when they were 6 or 7 years old. I'm sorry, supposed to have said 6 if the kid is strong, and 7 if he's not so strong. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Omele Rav Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. Rav said to Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. Now Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas was one of the Amiroyim, but he was also, as we see here, and as we had also in the first parak, he was a Melamed by profession. So Rav is giving him instructions for the cheder that he's running. We've talked about before, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that he was also a descendant of Haman. So Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas tells him, Ad shis loy to kabel, up to 6 years old, don't accept a child into your class. Mikan va'elach kabel, after that, after the age of 6, kabel, do accept him into your class, va'asfi le ketorah, and stuff him full of Torah, even va'al kochay, Rashi says, even against his will, like the way you put a yoke on an ox. So in other words, make sure that he learns. He's 6 years old. He doesn't appreciate the importance of learning yet, but you stuff him with as much Torah as you can. Tosfos points out, here Rashi is saying that the point is, as much as you force the ox to bear the yoke, the same way you make a kid accept the yoke of Torah. So it means, in other words, you give him Torah and to eat and drink, like the way that a shur is forced to wear an oil. Marshall points out that Rashi himself in Ksubas, the Gemara is also there, explains differently that it means, in other words, that it means like the way you stuff an ox to fatten him up. Marshall himself says Adarabba, it may mean like this. When you feed an animal, you don't stuff it necessarily. You give it the food gently. So the same way, in other words, Rav is telling Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas that on the contrary, don't force him, don't stuff it down his throat, but teach him gently, as in fact the Gemara tells us in Ksubas that between 6 and 12, that's what you do. At 12, the kid is still being stubborn and doesn't want to learn, then already you have to take stronger measures. So therefore, Adrava Aspile Ketorah would mean give him the Torah gently, like the way you feed an ox gently. By the way, they were showing him deal with, we talked a little bit yesterday about how it is, we have in Ovis ben Chomesh Shon Mikra, and he was saying 6 and 7. So one answer is that the Rebbe talks about the idea that at 5 the father was teaching him, and at 6 and 7 he's going to cheder. Different, we showed him talk about different possibilities, one of them being that the six years old over here means when the kid is in his sixth year, meaning when he's past his fifth birthday. So in that case, then it exactly fits what we're saying in Pirkei Avos. Okay. And the Amalei Rav Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, also Rav tells Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, and by the way, this that we're saying Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas was a Melamed, and Rav is giving him these instructions. We had in the first parak a little anecdote with him where one time he was in his garden, and Rav says, have you given up your teaching? Aren't you focused on your students? And he says that it's 13 years already that I haven't been in this garden, and this is the first time, and I'm still minding the children from out here. Or we said a different explanation is there were Talmidim of mine that I last saw 13 years ago, and I'm still thinking about them. So he was a very dedicated Melamed. So now Rav is giving him Pashut instructions that he should know as a Melamed of how to run his class. So for Omalei Rav Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, he mochus v'yinuka. When you have to hit a kid, then you should hit him only with a shoelace. In other words, a very light kind of thing. Not with strong blows. Marshall explains this also goes with the previous thing as well. In other words, a 6-year-old doesn't want to learn. So if he's 12 and doesn't want to learn, then he has to take stronger measures. But at 6, the maximum you use is like a shoelace. Dekori kori. Now, if a kid wants to learn, then good. He wants to learn. Wonderful. The deloy kori. If he's not willing to learn, lehevit sav salachavre. Then have him keep his friends company. So in other words, don't punish him too much. Rashi says, don't kick him out of the class. Let him sit together with the other kids in the class, and eventually he'll start paying attention. That's Marshall doesn't like that explanation because he says it doesn't really seem to fit. Doesn't really seem to fit with the wording over here. Rather, Marshall says what it means is that have him be b'chavrusa with a kid who does want to learn, because then that way then that way the two of them together, the one who wants to learn, will help the one who doesn't want to learn so much. And it'll help him learn. And also, Marshall explains, the idea is that if you kick this non-learner out of the class, then the other students are going to say, you know what, we should also cause trouble in class and get kicked out and be able to go and do whatever we want. So you want to avoid that, so therefore keep this kid in class and have him sit with one of the other kids who will have a good influence on him. Okay. V'omar Rava. Rava says another din in this connection. Sach makri dardiki, the total number of children that you can have by a melamed, esrin rachamisha yinuki, is 25 boys. The iyika chamshin, if you have 50 boys in town who need a cheder, mosvin and trei, then you have that who are school age, then you have two melamdim, one for each 25. Iyika arboyin, what happens if you have 40? It's not enough to have two full classes, but on the other hand, it's much too much for one teacher. And 25, Marshall points out, by the way, you have the simon for it, koyis abaruch hu es b'nei Yisrael. So 25 is the maximum. So what if you have between 40 and 50? Mukminan Reish Duchna. Then what we do is we appoint a behelfer, a teacher's aide, or Messiah and Lemi Masa, and we help him. We help the Malamed with community funds to help him hire that Reish Duchna, that assistant teacher. Different Rishonim talk about in halacha. Are we saying these are the maximums? In other words, that's what it sounds like. In other words, if you have more than 25 kids, then you need an assistant or something. Or another way of looking at it is, if you have less than 25 kids in the town, then we don't require the Vada Kohol to hire a teacher in the first place. The kids can just go to the next town over and learn together with the kids there. The Alter Rebbe talks about in some detail in Hilchos Talmud Torah who exactly is supposed to pay the Melamdim. In principle, the parents should be paying for the Melamdim, but not always did that work out. So there were places basically where, especially for poor people, where the Vada Kohol would arrange payment on their behalf. Nevertheless, we have many stories in Jewish history of parents who went on Mesiras Nefesh to be able to pay their children's Melamdim. The Baal Shem Tov himself was a behelfer. Yes, that's what a behelfer is. What the Gemara is calling over here, Reish Duchna. Literally, Reish Duchna means like the one who's on top of the platform. So, in other words, the idea would be that they'd be like sitting together with the students and teaching them, and the Reish Duchna is also there on the platform to assist with keeping order in the class and helping to teach the kids who aren't such good learners and so forth. Okay. The Gemara continues. V'omar Rava. Also, Rava says a din, more about dinim of melamdim, hai makri yinuki de goris. Rashi actually more specifically points out that the Reish Duchna is that actually what he does is the teacher teaches something to the class. The Reish Duchna, the behelfer, hears also what the Rebbe is saying, and then he helps review it with the teachers. With the teacher. So now that person has to be paid. So we're saying almost sign lemon master, so the teacher is assisted out of community funds to hire that Reish Duchna. V'omer Rava also says, Hai makri yinuki de goris. If you have a teacher who is teaching the students, and now you have there's another teacher who teaches more. So in other words, you have partially the second teacher covers more material in a year than the first one does. We do not fire the first teacher and take up the second teacher instead, because then he may get careless. He may think that he may think, you know what, he may think, in other words, they hired me, and I'm the fastest teacher, I'm the best teacher out there, so therefore I don't have to worry about therefore I don't have to be so careful to make sure that I'm doing a good job as teacher. He's going to figure like he's the best teacher there is. He's going to figure he's the best teacher there is. On the other hand, Reb Dimi Minahar Dar says Kol Shekin to Goris Tfei. On the contrary, And you should do that, because then that'll motivate the first one to also teach faster and cover more material. As we say, kinas sofrim, tarba chachma, jealousy among sofrim, among teachers, increases wisdom. So in other words, fakir, if the second one is, if we give the second one, then he'll realize he has to work even harder, because otherwise what's going to happen is the second teacher, if he slacks off, then he knows the first teacher is going to point that out publicly. Wait a minute, they hired you instead of me, and here you're not teaching as good as you could either. So therefore, so Adrabba, that'll motivate him, because he knows the other one is jealous of him, that'll motivate him to work harder and do even better. Maharsha points out we use this expression commonly, kinas sofrim tarba chachma, but really, strictly speaking, sofrim means sofrim, we often think of sofrim as just the ones who write Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos, but in contexts like this, sofrim actually means teachers, melamdim. So we find in various places in Shas where melamed is called a sofrim, the pashtus, I guess, because he writes out lessons for the kids, I don't know. In any case, so Maharsha points out, if somebody is already on the level of a chacham, then he's not really going to have such kina. Then he's not really going to be so jealous of somebody else's accomplishments. In fact, he doesn't even need to be jealous. Just the fact he'll be motivated on his own to learn and achieve more and more chachma. But when a person is on the level of sofrim, he's on the level of teachers, then he needs that motivation of kina in order to get him to do better. And therefore, that's what the Gemara is saying, kina sofrim taiba chachma. He may not be motivated yet to learn as much as possible and teach as much as possible. But at least he's motivated by the fact that he knows that somebody else is jealous of him and somebody else is looking over his shoulder, and therefore that's why we use the expression kinas sofrim rather than kinas chachamim. The Gemara continues, V'omer Rava, Hani Tre Makri Dardiki. Suppose again you have two potential teachers. Chad Goris V'loy Dayik, one of them teaches the kids a lot. He goes through the material fairly fast. V'loy Dayik, but he's not so medayik to make sure that the kids are not making mistakes when they're learning. V'chad Dayik V'loy Goris, and the other one is more precise to make sure that they know everything completely correctly. But he's not going through the material so fast. So which one should we choose? So Rava says, better we should appoint the teacher who goes through the material faster. This way they cover more ground, even though we don't care so much about that he's not medayik. My timer, because Rava says, you know why? Shabdeshta mamela nafka. The mistakes will eventually go away. In other words, they learn with a mistake, but eventually, as they learn over and over again, eventually the mistakes will work themselves out, and there won't be a problem. They won't go the rest of their life with that mistake. But on the other hand, like this, they've covered a lot of ground, so like this, and that's more beneficial for them, says Rava. Rav Dimi min Ahudah says, on the contrary, better in a case like that, we should have the teacher who's more precise and makes sure that the kids don't make mistakes, rather than, even though he's not learning so fast, my timer, because Rav Dimi min Ahudah says, on the contrary, shabesh shakivin to all. Once a mistake has gotten in, then it tends to stay in and not get worked out that easily. And Rav Dimi says, I'll give you an example of that from Jewish history, where we see that somebody made a mistake and as a cheder yingel, and it persisted for a long time after that. What happened? Dichtiv, the pasuk describes in David HaMelech's times, David and his army fought against various Goyish nations around Eretz Yisrael, one of them being Edom. We have Kapitel Samach of Tilim, by Yoshev Yoyev, by Achaz Edom, the gay Melach, Shnei Masa Aleph. So there was a war against Edom. And the pasuk describes, Kisheshes Chadoshim Yoshev Sham Yoyev B'chol Yisrael. Yoyev and the whole Jewish army remain there in Edom for 6 months. Ad Hichris Kol Zachar B'Edom, until they had killed off every male in Edom. Which is actually that's the halacha. When you conquer a place, as it says in the Psukim in Parashas Shoftim, you're supposed to, except for the seven nations, but any place outside of that, you're supposed to kill generally speaking, you're supposed to kill the men and leave the women and children alive. And the Psukim go on to describe how there was one guy named Hadad who got away from there and ended up in Mitzrayim, and many years later he fought against Shloima in Shloima's later years and then made Edom independent again. Or semi-independent, at least. Anyway, so now, so he'd killed all the men, but Now the Gemara picks up the story. Ki osa l'kamei, l'gabei, l'kamei to David, when Yoav came back to David to report on what he had done, Omalei, so David asked him, my time of Abdesachi, why'd you do that? Why only the men? Why not the women? Omalei, so Yoav says, what's the problem? So he says, Zohar Amalek. It says you should kill the males of Amalek. So in other words, if even Amalek, you only have to kill the males, how much more so the rest of Edom? Amalek, so David tells him, V'hanan zecher kodin. And what do you mean? We don't read the pasuk zecher Amalek, we say zecher, which means the remembrance of Amalek. So in that case, then, okay, Edom is not the rest of Amalek, fine, but you have no basis to say that it should be only the men. Amalek, so Yoav says, V'didi zecher akriyun. When I was in Cheder, I learned it as zecher. That's how my Rebbe taught it. Ozel Shaili the Rabbi. So now it's years later. Yoav goes and asks his old Rebbe. Amalei Heichi Akritun. He asks him, how did you teach us? Cheder Yinglach. Amalehu. And then the Malamed says, Simchas Zocher Amalek. Zocher. So that's how I taught it with the word Zocher. There is an interesting idea, as we know, there's a difference of Mesorah, whether it's Zecher or Zecher, which is why in Parshas Shalach and in Parshas Kisese, we read it twice. So I once saw an interesting idea. Somebody wanted to say that maybe from this Gemara you could actually prove that the correct way is Zecher with a Tzere and a Segel on the ground of, this person argues, the same way as you have certain words in Lashon Kodesh, as we know, where the form of the word changes when it's Nismach. So like you have, for example, bias becomes base, and similar, there are things like that. So somebody argued that zohar would become, when it means the males of, it would become zecher. So therefore, he wants to say that was the mistake. This Malamed taught him zecher with two segels, and really it's supposed to be a tzere and a segel, which means the remembrance of. Interesting chap, but anyway. So in fact he had taught him wrongly. So Yoav picked up a sword of Balam Mikdalei. He was about to kill this old Malamed of his. Amalei, the guy says, why? Amalei, so Yoav says, Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Oru Oisim Malachas Hashem Remiah. Cursed is the one who does Hashem's work falsely. Which means, in other words, so in the simple sense, we would say, in other words, it means that you did Hashem's work falsely. Your work is Hashem's work, teaching children, teaching Cheder Yinglach, and you did it, and you did it badly. So therefore, there's a curse on you. But we'll talk about in a second what some Mephoshim say on it. Amalei, so the Malamed says, fine, I understand, you're right, I did Malachas Hashem Remiah, but fine, the Pasuk is Orosh. Now, by the way, mind you, the Pasuk over here, Orosh Malachas Hashem Remiah, comes from Yumiya. Now, Yumiya lived several hundred years after the story, so this is what we were talking about previously, that Tosfos mentions in Gittin, that in general, the Gemara often takes it as a given, that people from earlier generations knew what's going to be expressed in Pesukim hundreds of years after their times, because the concept of it existed beforehand and is even hinted at someplace in the five Chumashim. So the guy says, Shaskilahu Gavra, fine, leave that man, meaning me alone, the Leikum Ba'orah, fine, I'm under an order, isn't that bad enough? Do you need you to threaten me on top of that? Amalei, so Yoav answers, Hoksib, yeah, but the same pasuk continues, V'oru menei achar b'midam, and cursed is the one who holds back a sword from blood. So in other words, the implication is, when somebody is cursed for doing Malachas Hashem Remiah, then cursed is the person who holds back his sword and doesn't dispatch the guy. So ikadami kapli, the ikadami loy kapli. Some say that he ended up killing him, others say that not. Now what's going on over here? So there's a Kosev brings over here an explanation from the Rashba. First of all, it's not so much that the Malamed, the Rashba explains that it's not that the Malamed himself pronounced the word incorrectly when he taught the children, that it was he himself, Yoav, had said the word wrongly, and the Malamed didn't take care to correct him. The point is, though, Rav Dimi Minhada is saying, you see from that, that mistake persisted for a long time and misled Yoav into doing the wrong thing. So therefore, so our Kosev brings in turn from the Ritva that the vote is. When we said you have a choice between two malamdim, one who teaches more precisely but doesn't go very fast and vice versa, we don't mean where he actually teaches them with mistakes. There's no question, then we would have to say shabesh to kiven to all. If the teacher teaches the children wrongly, there's no question that's going to persist with them. The question is, if he's not paying attention and not supervising correctly to make sure that they pronounce and say the words right, then you have the question of whether that's going to persist or whether eventually the kid is going to learn to say it the right way. So now, when his... So in other words, the vote would be when he goes and asks the teacher, and the teacher says, Zohar Amalek. So it means, in other words, now Yoav realizes, so it's not even that that the teacher pronounced it correctly and I just said it wrongly in class and he didn't correct me. No, it's that he himself taught wrong. So in that case, he had no business being a teacher in the first place, and he was Oysim Malachas Hashem Ramiya. Then he goes on to explain also that when we say that, as far as the last part of the story about the order and the killing and all of that, so it means, in other words, the Ritva learns like this. It means the Melamed says to Yoav, you're telling me that order Oysim Malachas Hashem Ramiya. Fine, but what's it your business? Why do you care if I'm order? And then Yoav says, because you caused me to be Oru Menei Achai B'Mijam. You caused me that I didn't do my job as the general of the army to do the correct job of getting rid of Edom. So now, there are two ways of looking at it. One way to say would be that he killed him for causing him to do that. The other way of looking at it is, look, the guy was a shogeg and it's many years ago, so therefore you can't really hold him responsible for that. Now, Marshall has a whole different explanation like this. First of all, look, we have to ask a couple of basic questions on the story, says Marshall. First of all, fine, Yoav was taught wrongly in that cheder, where the teacher taught him wrongly, but there were many other Jewish soldiers over there who went to different chadarim when they were little. Did all their teachers make the same mistake? How is it that nobody picked up on this, that we shouldn't be doing this way? And also, they all knew what had happened to Shaul, where he left alive a Gag, and he left alive sheep from Amalek, and he got in trouble with it. And in fact, the question is also, Taka, we find in the Psukim over there, after Yoav defeated Edom, then the Pasuk says that David set up governors over there, over the people who were left. Why governors? Why, Taka, doesn't he deal with them like Amalek and wipe them all out? So Maharsha explains like this. When it comes to, we have a mitzvah that once the Jewish people appoint a king, then they have a mitzvah to wipe out Amalek. You have the three mitzvahs that they have after they come into Eretz Yisrael, to appoint a king, to destroy Amalek, and to build the Beis Mikdash. And now that they had David, they worked on Amalek, and now in the next thing David wanted to build the Beis Mikdash, except that Nelson Anavi tells him in Hashem's name it's not the time yet. As far as Edom in general, though, there's no mitzvah nowadays to destroy Edom. There will be lost lava, as the pasuk says, v'lo yisodet leveis Esav. There won't be a remnant of the house of Esav and v'olam hashim v'hausiyon. So, but it's not time for that yet. In fact, by the way, interestingly, there are Mephoshim who explain one of the reasons why we have the whole genealogy of Esav at the end of Parshas Vayishlach. Why is it important for us to know it? One explanation is because that helps us know who is from Amalek and has to be destroyed, and who are from the various other branches of Edom, which do not have to be destroyed yet. So then the verdict is, in other words, so this war, it's not the war against Amalek, it's not the final war La'asid Lavoi, it's only a Melchemes Rishus. So therefore, so the rest of the Jewish people, fine, so they figured, the usual rules of a war apply, as the Psukim say in Parshas Shoftim, you kill the men, and you kill the men, and you leave alive the women and children. But David asks Yoav, why were you specifically doing that? Mela, the rest of the soldiers, fine. They realize, they figure it's just a Melchemes Rishus. But why about you? Why didn't you go the extra mile? And he tells him, because by Melchemes Mitzvah, by Amalek, the Pasuk is saying, you only have to destroy the men, how much more so Melchemes Rishus? And David tells him that no, even by Amalek, there's no difference between Zohar and Nekeva. So Marshall's adds then, so now we're saying, so again, the verdict is that we're saying that the teacher himself taught them wrongly. So in other words, then, so part of what Hakosev brings over here was it that the teacher taught them wrongly, or was it that the teacher was careless and didn't pay attention to what the children were saying? And we're saying one way of understanding it is that, and if he was teaching them correctly, then how could he be helped? The answer is, if he's not supervising them correctly, then he shouldn't have taken on a job as a teacher. So therefore, yes, he is responsible for the consequences of having taught the children wrongly. So we see from that, says Reb Dimi Minhag Dor, you see that an error like that can persist for a long time, and therefore you have to make sure to have a Malamed who teaches the children accurately, rather than he covers a lot of ground, but he allows them to make mistakes. So he himself teaches them with mistakes, and those mistakes can have catastrophic effects, as we're saying over here.
Before the time of reading the Torah in public.
This is before the Takana. Well, no, the Takana of reading the Torah in public goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Gemara explains, and we learned in Bava Kamma, that originally up to Ezra's times, you only needed to have, you would have one person would read three psukim, or you'd have three psukim would get up and read one, three people would get up and read one pasuk apiece. The fact that we have to have a minimum of three olam and a minimum of 10 psukim, that's the Takana of Ezra, yeah.
Did they read the whole Torah?
They read the whole Torah at one time or another, I guess. I mean, the children were learning the whole Torah and whichever books of Nach have been written by that point. Yeah. Okay. Further on, the Gemara gets into a discussion. So again, the Mishnah had talked about that if a person, for example, has a business in a town, then somebody else is not allowed to come in and open a competing business because hasogas gvul. But you have certain details in that connection. You have sometimes, for example, peddlers who come in with their wares and they have a certain right to go around in the town and sell, especially if people owe them money from before and they want to be able to sell something in town in order to be able to earn the money so they can pay back their creditors and such things are allowed. So eventually that brings the Gemara to the following story. Reb Dimi Minhag Dor, this is the same Reb Dimi Minhag Dor that we just had in the previous feast, I see Groigris Bisfina. One time he brought some dried figs on a boat to sell in town. So the Reish Galusa, the governor of the Jews in Babel, who's responsible, among other things, for enforcing the rules about commerce, he says to Rava, Hukhazi, go out and see, eat suvim and abonon, who, if this person who just came with the boat is a Talmud Chacham, nokit le shuka, then hold the market for him. Meaning, in other words, what you'll do is announce nobody else can sell dried figs until he finishes selling his stock. The idea is, in other words, the Gemara is explaining that they had tremendous respect for Talmud Chachamim. They knew a Talmud Chacham's time is valuable, and you don't want to. He has to earn a parnasa, but you don't want to make him waste any more time on it than necessary. So instead of having to compete with all the other people in town who would be selling groigers, instead he has exclusive rights to sell until he sells out his whole stock. Then he can return to learning Torah, and then everybody else can start selling mares. But only if he's a Talmud Chacham does he get that special privilege. So the Reish Galusa tells Rava, who was the Rosh Hashiva there in town, to go check out the matter. So in turn, Rava delegates it to one of his Talmidim, Rav Adab Ava. He tells him, go check him out. Literally, tohilei akankane literally means sniff his barrel. In other words, the metaphor is, let's say you have a barrel of wine. You don't know whether it's good wine or whether it turns sour. So you give a sniff and you see. So therefore, it's used as a metaphor, like check him, examine him in halachas, and see if he's a Talmud Chacham or not. So then we'll know. Tosfos points out that Rav Adarbat Ahava actually was an earlier Talmud Chacham who lived in the time of Rebbe. So rather over here, it would really be Rav Adarbat Abba rather than Bar Ahava. With that said, there's other, from other places, it seems there may have been two of Adab Avas, one in Rebbe's times and one a few generations later now in Rava's times. Okay. In any case, so go check him out and see whether he's a Talmud Chacham. Nofak Ozel, sort of Adab Ava went. Ozel, Nofak Ozel, he went out. Bo Mine, and he went to the Dimi Minhag Dor and asked him the following question. Pil Shabolak Fifa Mitzvahs. If an elephant swallowed a basket made out of reeds, mitzris literally means Egyptian, but it means it's more meloshin mitzorim, which means stems of willow stems. So they would take stems of arabis and weave baskets out of them. So suppose an elephant swallowed such a thing, the hekia derech beis ra'i, and it excreted it out the other end. The reason why we're saying an elephant is because an elephant would be large enough that the basket could get through its whole digestive system intact and come out the other end. So mahu, what would be the din? Is that keli still makabel truma? Is it considered as though it was digested, and therefore now it's considered like clay glolim? Clay glolim are kelim that are made out of animal dung, which are not makabel truma. Or do we consider that it went in and came out intact, and therefore it's still considered like the original basket that it was, and therefore it's still makabel truma? So what's the din? So lo yahava b'yada, he didn't know the answer. The Gemara actually has a discussion about this elsewhere in Shas, and the Gemara goes through various arguments, pro and con, about it. But Rav Dini ben Ahudah didn't know about that. Amalei, sort of Dini, he wasn't from this town, he didn't know the people there, but he knew that Rava is the Rosh Hashiva over here. Amalei, so he says to him, Adab Abba, Ma'niu Rava, are you Rava? He had heard that Rava is the great person in the city, so he thought the one who is testing him must be Rava himself. So Tofach Leba Sandalu. In answer, Rav Adab Abba tapped him with a sandal, and said to him, there's a big gap between me and Rava. Rava is much greater than I am. Mihu, nevertheless, al kochach, but you have to say, given that you couldn't even answer such a question. So Rashi says tof chle b'sandale means like he took a stick and hit him on his shoe, as if like to say you're nobody important, like the way you would do, like to act dismissively towards somebody and say that you're not really all that important. And he tells him, "Ben didila Rava tova ikka. Between me and Rava, there's a big gap. Rava is much greater than I am. Mihu, however, al kochach, of necessity, you have to say, since you didn't even know the answer, anor rabach, I would have to be considered your rebbe. The Rava, Rava de rabach, and Rava would be the rebbe of your rebbe." So in other words, you're not really much of a Talmud Chacham. Marshall talks about it. Okay, we'll talk about it in a second. So the slave for Nokdulei Shuka. So it was decided we're not going to hold the market for him. He's not a Talmud Chacham, and he doesn't get that special privilege of being able to sell his wares first. Posted Groger's today, and in the end, his figs end up spoiling. Also, a came to Rav Yosef, so he came to Rav Yosef to complain. Omalei says, "Chazi, my obli, believe, come, Rebbe, look and see what they did to me, that they caused me a loss." Amalei, so Rav Yosef says, you know, you have a valid point. You are, after all, a Talmud Chacham, and they should have realized that you're better. Now the Ritva points out over here that in fact there is in fact a whole discussion on it in Masechta Menachos, and the Gemara ends up saying we don't really know the answer. So one answer is again there is a whole sugya on it over there. At least Rav Dini should have been able to quote some things from that sugya. But nevertheless, Rav Yosef recognizes that Rav Dini min Hadar is in fact a Talmud Chacham. Okay, he didn't know the answer then. Maybe he didn't have the head to think about it or whatever. But so Rav Yosef tells him, "Mandala Shaye leunisa de Malka de Edom, Hashem who did not delay paying back for the insults to the king of Edom." Which we'll explain, we'll quote the pasuk in a second about that. Lo l'shaye lo unisa. Hashem will not delay paying back for the onah to you. So if even Hashem looked out for the honor of a goyish king, how much more so that Hashem will look out for your honor? Dichtiv, as we find in the pasuk, the Novi Omer says, "Koyam Hashem al shloisha pishe noyav, for three sins of moyav," meaning for three, I'm willing to give them a break and not punish them yet. But for the fourth one, and Rashi explains on the pesukim over there, the three are b'dezara gilad ayis and shvichas damin. So they're over on all those. Nevertheless, Hashem says I'm not ready to punish them yet. But for the fourth one, lo yashivenu, I will not hold back. I will not take back my anger against them. In other words, for this, I'm going to punish them. I'll surfei atzmis melech Edom lasig, that they took the bones of the king of Edom and burned them to make wine. So in other words, Pasha, they took the bones of a king of Edom and then treated them with bazillion and burnt them. This is, by the way, one of the sources where they talk about the whole concept of cremation, that's a bazillion for the mess, as we see over here, that the Pasuk is, that the Pasuk Hashem is going to say he's going to punish the whole nation of Moab for treating the bones of a goy with bazillion. One explanation of when that happened is you find in Sefer Melachim, it tells about how at one point the king of Yehuda and the king of Yisrael, the Aseret HaShvatim, and the king of Edom, at that point Edom was still ruled over by Yehuda, so their king was really a governor appointed who was answerable to the king of Yehuda. Anyway, the three of them went to war against Moab, and the Pesukim describe over there how at the end of the battle it says that the king of Moab took his son and offered him on top of the wall as a korban. To his getchkes. Actually, the Gemara elsewhere has machlokas whether maybe he meant it in a twisted way, l'shem shemayim, but anyway, some mafarshim explain that it means that they managed to capture the firstborn son of the king of Edom and sacrificed him as a korban to their getchkes. And then afterwards they took him and burnt him. So now Hashem punished them for that. So the same way Rabbi Yosef says, Rav Dimi, that Hashem will also also look after your covered the fact that you were insulted like that. Marsha goes into some detail over here. We see that there were several generations involved over here. Rav Yosef, who was the Rebbe of Abaya and Rava, was still alive. And Rava himself is already a prominent Rosh Hashiva, and he has Talmidim of his own, including Rav Ada Ba'ava. And so he explains, one thing is, when he says that Rava is the Rebbe of your Rebbe, what he means is actually Rav Yosef is really the Rebbe of all of us. So what happened was, Noch Nafshid Rav Ada Ba'ava. Not long after that, Rav Ada Ba'ava passed away. So now many of the Chachamim were blaming themselves for that because of them, Rav Ada Ba'ava, Tamar Chacham, was punished. Tosfos points out, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, that if Reuven is punished because of Shimon, if Reuven had treated Shimon badly, and therefore Hashem punishes Reuven, then Shimon himself is not brought in, he's not brought in into the highest levels of Gan Eden. So now each of the Chachamim who was involved in this story, and several who were not directly involved in the story, but were involved with Rav Ada Ba'ava in other ways, each of them blamed themselves that I acted in a way that precipitated Rav Ada Ba'ava's passing, and therefore that now I may not get into high levels of Gan Eden. The Ritva points out, by the way, the point is that because, the point is, Rav Yosef is saying, the fact that he asked you a question in Seder Taris, in Halacha and Hilchas Taris, and even the Chachamim of those times were not always so expert in the details of Hilchas Taris. So Mela, if he had asked you in something else in Torah and you didn't know, okay, then they'd have a valid point to judge you that you're not a Talmud Chacham. But the fact that you didn't know something in Seder Taris, that's not a slur against you, and therefore they shouldn't have treated you that way. So now Rabbi Yosef Amar, no anishke, dan no latise. So now Rabbi Yosef blames himself that I cursed him. I said that Hashem, who looked out for the honor of the king of Edom, is going to look out for your honor. So I shouldn't have spoken that way. In other words, that now in effect I was calling on Hashem to punish Rav Ada Ba'ava for doing that way to you. Marsha points out, actually, that the vote is, in other words, that usually we find, and you have many other psukim over there in almost where Hashem says that I'm going to punish a certain nation for what they did, but that's always where they did to many other people, to a nation in general. But this is the only one where you find where they insulted and treated an individual with bizoyim like that, this case with Melech Edron, and in fact, he brings from Rashi on the Pesukim that what they did when they were saying they made it into lime, lime is used for plaster. So they partially took this plaster afterward that they had made, where they burned the bones in it and used it to daub on a wall as if they were painting, like painting the wall. So that's a tremendous bizoyan. So therefore, so what happened over here? Rava only said that just fine. If he's not a Talmud Chacham, we're not going to give him the special privilege of selling his merchandise first. Meanwhile, Rav Ada Ba'ava had added the greater vizoyan by hitting him on the shoe and saying, "Anor Rabach," etc. So, but now Rabbi Yosef is saying, "La'achra Maisa," that I shouldn't have taken such a view of the thing to say that Hashem is going to punish him for insulting you like that. Rav Dimi Amar No Anishkei. Rav Dimi says that it was my fault that he got punished, because he caused my figs to get spoiled, and therefore I held that against him. And so we'll continue. So we'll continue next time. That's the shame that the variety, a number of other Chachamim gave other reasons why they felt that they were at fault for what happened to Rabbi Abba Abba. Yom Yom Mashiach Chag Ola, Chav Gimel Shvat, rather. We have one of the promises for the Gula Amitis Vashleimai, Yom Mashiach Tikenu, when it comes to the Umas Olam, is, as the Pasuk here, we were just talking about wars among the Umas Olam, but the Pasuk says famously that grind up their spears and use they'll cut down their swords and use them for plow blades, and they'll cut their spears and use them for sickles. Well, you said goy or goy cherev, they won't lift up swords one against one nation against the other. Well, yom adoy mochama, and they won't learn war anymore. And as the psukim say, as the psukim say right after that, it says that Mashiach will judge between the nations and then and tell them off and tell them what they're doing wrong so that they won't be fighting wars with one another. And the Radak on the Pasuk explains, what does this mean? Who's v'shapa ben agoyim? Means Melech HaMashiach. He's going to be ruling over all the nations. He will, v'chiyach la'amim rabbi, means that he will say to anybody who's doing wrong, you're doing wrong, fix up what you're doing wrong. So therefore, there won't be wars between nations because I'll make peace between them, and therefore they won't need weapons and they'll cut them up and use them for farming tools. In other sichas around that time, that I've talked about how at that time there were arms reduction treaties going on between America and Russia, and they were literally taking things that were used until now for war and using them for peacetime uses. So it's all part of this idea of Mashiach teaching them that war is unnecessary and harmful, and that they should be using their resources for better things. Okay, continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we were talking about, when we talked about yesterday about the atorah, about the atorah to tell the top part of the talus, so Rabbi Zelikson sent me something interesting from a sefer. So we talked about yesterday, is it that originally they used to have silver ones, and then the Alter Rebbe's times they stopped because they had to sell them off in order to raise money for the Alter Rebbe's, to ransom the Alter Rebbe. The Beis Rebbe says that, but the sefer also says it seems it's very unlikely to be true for a number of reasons. Basically, what he says is that there is on the one hand an inyan, which we're saying from the Shalar Kaddish, to make sure that the top end of the talus will always remain the top end, and the bottom end will always remain the bottom end. On the other hand, you also don't want to have something that makes it look like the talus is mainly for the head. If you have an atorah on the outside, which is the part that goes on your head, then it's going to make people think that the main part of the talus is the part that covers the head. And as we've been learning before, the Alter Rebbe makes the point, the main part of the talus is actually what covers the body. We even talked about, do you even need to cover the head with the talus? We had two different opinions. Therefore, the compromise is we have a lining on the inside. That way we can tell which end is which. But in this way, it doesn't make it look like the head end is any more important than any other end. And we realize that the body of the part of the talus that covers the body is really the more important part. Now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, when you're wrapping yourself in the talus, then make sure that at one point you should have that all four tzitzis will be on your left side, which is again Tatifas Eishmaelim, the way that the Arabs wrap themselves in their garments and stay like that, stand like that for four amos. That's the time it takes to walk four amos, and that's when we say the Psukim Mayako Chasafar Lakim. Then afterwards, then you take the two tzitzis, you have two in front of you, two behind you, and this way you're surrounded by mitzvahs. Some people have the minhag that they take the right side and put it over them and put it around their neck and put it over their left shoulder, which is another way of saying surrounded by mitzvahs. This way, in other words, the person's entire neck and entire body is surrounded by mitzvahs. The Mogen Avraham actually writes that it should be that way throughout the whole davening, and the Alter Rebbe writes that in the Siddur as well. Nevertheless, that's not our minhag. You just do that. The most widespread minhag is we just do that when we first put on the talus and stand like that for four amos, and then afterwards we just put it on and have it hanging in front of our shoulders and not wrapped in front of the neck.
But you really don't have to cover the head.
You really, in principle, so that's the thing. The Alter Rebbe talked about before that there's two different ways of looking whether you have to wrap your head because otherwise it's not called atifa, or whether. After this, that's the thing. According to the first opinion Alter Rebbe had brought, you would actually have to stay wrapped with it around your head the entire davening. According to the second way of looking at it, you wouldn't. So Lamaisa, what we do is, as a compromise, we hold it that way around our head. We cover our head with it and cover part of our face with it when we're first putting it on and making the bracha, and stay that way for four amos, and then afterwards we follow the other opinion and just take it off and just have it hanging on the two sides. Yeah. But still covering, the covering the head is something else. Covering the head is because you have to have two makipim. So you have your yarmulke and you have your talis in.